time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
The Nandina is a species of flowering plant native to Eastern Asia. The smell at certain times of the year gives you a real buzz. Like the buzz you get just before pulling the trigger.
I have a favor to ask.
What is it?
My grandniece. I would like you to take her on as an apprentice. She dropped out of school and then she ended up in a bad crowd.
You'll learn how to garden.
Are you satisfied with the life that you have?
Why would you ask that? You know, you talk about... There's one thing you don't talk about.
What's that?
Yourself.
Well, there's not much to know.
You put the deep six on nine bad guys.
Oh, well, it was a long time ago.
Even if they're dead, you're not forgotten.
Have you ever killed anyone?
Why would you say that?
Take off your shirt.
You are impertinent.
Maya's just finding her own way.
And I'm the Queen of Scotland.
Gardening is a belief in the future. A belief that things will happen according to plan. Who did this to you?
What are you gonna do?
Time to start a new life.
I have created this life. Filled it with rules. Now seems the time to break one.
So if you're a gardener, should you also actually be taking part in a Paul Schrader movie? It is Paul Schrader after all, and he's very impressive with respect to his cinematic acting. Richard Fitzwilliams, what say you with respect to the Master Gardener, and have you got green fingers yourself?
Not personally, I have to admit, but when it comes to a movie like this, I mean, it is a very unusual movie, and it's... story is, putting it mildly, extremely unusual. There are times when the way it is handled, the music, the sound, the visuals, all of them very impressive. What it gives you, certainly in cinematic terms, a very good cast too, which we'll dwell on in a minute. But for a story quite like this, you really are suspending belief. And one of the problems I had with this movie was that intellectually, I mean, it begins with a voiceover. It's narrated by Joel Edgerton, who plays Narvel Roth, a very, very pivotal role, because he is the chief of the gardening staff working at Gracewood Gardens. Now, Gracewood Gardens is owned by Mrs. Haverhill, played by Sigourney Weaver. Anyone seeing Sigourney Weaver for the first time, even the moment I saw her playing a rather aristocratic American lady with, shall we say, extremely dodgy tastes, as we discover throughout the film, knows that in fact there's something weird and something particularly dark about her past, especially when, no spoilers of course, but it does happen that her father had a Luger pistol, whereas of course he might have acquired it perfectly legitimately, or indeed as one of the occupying forces in Germany. I wouldn't be at all surprised if it was perhaps, shall we say, a little Germanic. No spoilers, Alex, of course. But one of the problems with Narvel is that he doesn't want to take off his shirt. Anybody seeing what's underneath will fully appreciate that this is somebody who very well could have, very possibly could have, a very, very, very dark past indeed. Now, Mrs. Haverhill has a slight conscience. She hasn't got much of a conscience, I have to say, but The only thing she wants to do, she doesn't particularly want to see her, but she has a troubled great niece, Maya, played by Quintessa Swindell. Maya has drug problems, putting it mildly. She's also, and this is very significant so far as the film's concerned, given Narvel's particular, shall we say, past proclivities, she's mixed race. Her mother, whom Mrs. Haverhill intensely dislikes, has died, so she wants to employ her. She doesn't see her when she arrives at Gracewood Gardens, not to begin with, and they certainly don't get on when they do meet. But what is it that attracts Narvel to Maya? Now, this is actually a very improbable relationship, and I do have to say that whereas the film should have made it and could have made it a bit more convincing, I took some convincing that we weren't actually watching a movie, because you see, it's very intellectualized. What we have are Narvel's narrations about how a garden is created and the power, the fascination of plants, and the way this links to humankind, whether you have an orderly garden, that's one thing, where you have an orderly universe for mankind. But of course, when the garden gets out of control, and there's plenty out of control here, we get into really dark territory. It's an interesting movie in the sense that Joel Edgerton puts in a good performance. Certainly Sigourney Weaver, early 70s, my goodness, she's doing well. She looks superb. And Quintessa Swindell is excellent as Maya. She has just the right sort of attitude, where you see the very effective scene between Mrs. Haverhill and Maya, and each of them are perfect representatives of certain attitudes of mind of a certain generation. It has good scenes. It's well acted, as I say, the way it's presented to us with the music and the sound and the visuals. Yes, so far as the story is concerned, I took a lot of convincing, and whereas it makes certain obvious points, which it would be giving a spoiler too much to reveal, what it was saying was obvious. Also, I get very tired. If we're going to have a sex scene, let's be honest, if the camera is faded, is dark at a certain extent, you see the way people are standing in a room, and you know that there's a coordinator there making an intimacy coordinator, making absolutely sure that we're going to see a certain amount, but no more. This is a movie that has a bit to learn. It could and should have been absolutely superb because of the way parts of it are handled. But it's dealing with a story which, quite honestly, I mean, Narvel is about 50 and Maya is 20. Well, it's intriguing, but it's not satisfying.
You're the sort of person, Richard, who probably didn't like Cat People back in 1982 with Anastasia Kinski, obviously another Paul Schrader epic. I mean, for goodness sakes, there's Paul Schrader, 76 American years. He's been responsible for Cat People. He's been responsible for First Reformed, Light Sleeper, Raging Bull. He actually wrote, or indeed co-wrote, Raging Bull. He wrote the screenplay for Martin Scorsese's Taxi Driver. For goodness sake, cut him some slack. I mean, this is outrageous in terms of the sort of line here. This man is a Hollywood genius for his whole
system. What did you think of it, Alex? Have you seen it?
Let's move on to Sarah Huntley in terms of your thoughts vis-a-vis intimacy coordinators and such like.
I misheard. We had a whole biography. Forgive me, Sarah, interjecting. We had a whole biography there. It's fascinating. But I asked a simple question at the end. Answer came there none.
I don't think we actually need to actually respond to those kind of things. I already had to clip out an unfortunate profanity from the clip that we used in the trailer, because we can't actually sort of have that kind of language on the Madrid Drive Morning Edition. Sarah?
Well, everything you boys are talking about is making me want to see it even more, I have to say. I don't know. I don't know about this intimacy thing. I always understood. I mean, I've never had to have really that problem, and you just have to kiss a few people on stage, and then it wasn't really talked about. You just did it. That's quite intriguing. I think I probably would like to go and see this film, actually. And Sigourney Weaver, I think, is a very, very good actress. So I would want to go and see it on because of her. I think that's basically my logic behind it.
And the fact it was written and directed by Paul Schrader. Jessica Burtis, what about your thoughts in... I presume you're still in Dublin, or have you moved back to North Carolina?
I'm still in Ireland, yeah. I'm visiting a friend outside of Dublin, but I'm still here. But I think for this film, it's one of those more interpersonal-based movies, whereas I think I tend to be drawn more to world-building and things like that. But Richard gave it such a good review, and the cast is pretty well known, so I think it'd be interesting to see this. I think it's a movie that my mom would like, so maybe when I go home, me and my mom can go see this.
Yeah, he's going for a 6 out of 10.
I'm going to 5 out of 10 because of in unconvincing aspects of it that irritated me, quite honestly. But I do give credit where it's due to Sigourney Weaver, who was absolutely excellent, to the cast, and indeed to the way it's presented. But it should have been better. It had to convince me. The name of the director may well spark off Alex legendary memories, but we deal with, you know, film.
As I said, you probably didn't like Cat People, the remake that Paul Schrader put together back in 1982. But so
I didn't see it, Alex. I didn't see it.
Well, there you are.
As you didn't see this.
How do you know? I haven't answered. I'm pleading the Fifth Amendment with respect to that. Kathy Manso, trying to connect, but the Wi-Fi is going against her. She's going to keep us updated on our progress. It's all right. Don't worry. And Natasha Wanton, we need to send out best wishes, Sarah, to Natasha and Jessica, of course, and Richard, because she sent a last-minute message in. She won't be joining because she's in bed with flu and no voice.
Oh, dear. Get better soon, Natasha.
Yeah. Exactly. She says, apologies for any inconvenience. Don't worry. There's no thing that we just have to sort of rework a few bits and pieces. Oliver Stanley, I noted, did actually join, but then dropped out fairly rapidly. So perhaps there are internet challenges that are going there. Or maybe in a world-building sense, perhaps the whole essence is that the world builders are actually moving to a whole new environment, an environment that basically has got so many delightful aspects to it. It's all focusing on Ariel, and indeed her joyous activities as she goes through. In fact, I have to be honest, when I saw The Little Mermaid back in 1989, it made me cry. It made me shed a tear. It was that kind of impactful in terms of the sequence. A great actor with Halle Berry, not Halle Berry, Halle Berry, or somebody from that point of view. But I'm not sure about any movie that has Melissa McCarthy in, because surely Melissa McCarthy, although she is actually typecast here as Ursula, the evil witch of the sea, she really should not have actually had the accompaniment of Awkwafina as one of the other characters who actually sings when really she shouldn't be allowed to sing in the first place. But that's scuttle for you. Enough of such stuff. Richard, you again have never seen the animated Little Mermaid, the original Disney adaptation of the Hans Christian Andersen classic. Jessica Burtis, I presume you have seen The Adventures of Ariel in its original incarnation.
Oh, I've seen the original animation, yes. I haven't seen the new one, but the original is classic.
It is a classic. Sarah Huntley, did you catch it? Did you actually take Imogen along when she was in her pre-medical student days?
No. It was Finding Nemo for us, I think, that was the one. But I love the story of The Little Mermaid. And like you, it makes me cry. Mm. And I've been to Copenhagen when I was a girl quite a lot. So we used to go and visit the statue, which is very small, actually, when you go back and look at it now.
Well, but I think that's why she was little, you know?
Yes.
It wasn't a giant mermaid.
No. But I think it's a very profound story, isn't it? It's about loss. And why they've actually
taken that line in the particular remake of actually having an engagement party as opposed to a wedding, which is the ultimate scenario, I just don't know. However, Richard Fitzwilliams, not as bad as people thought it was going to be originally, but would you say, as you've never seen the original, yes, you thoroughly enjoy this because you love CGI and movies that have lots of CGI in it, like The Lion King?
Well, I think, Alex, what you meant, yes, I do enjoy Disney's live action movies. Yes, you're right there. I think that was what you were getting at. And indeed, this is the reason one of the reasons I think that, and it has had mixed reviews, yes, but it is directed by Rob Marshall. Now, that is something very much in its favor because he did Chicago, he did Nine, he did Memoirs of a Geisha, he did Mary Poppins Returns,
He's
and
the Paul Schrader of his age in many ways.
Sebastian, Ariel needs constant supervision, but you're just decrepit.
I am no witness, not what? We've got to be bold. Act quickly. I'm a crab on a mission. Oh, I still got it. Let's go! When I give the signal, rob me!
Got it!
No, you idiot!
Ariel!
Ariel!
Ariel! Ow!
Sorry about that!
Get off me, you fool!
Obsession with humans has to stop.
I just want to know more about them.
Your father wants you to stay as far away from the human world as possible.
Can you help me?
Ariel killed the prince yet?
No. Kissed your bird brain.
Poor child.
The sea witch?
What has your father told you about me?
You like to stir up trouble.
I'll make you human for 3 days.
Is that even possible?
It's what I do.
I leave that comparison to you, Alex. Yes, indeed. No, produced by Hamilton's Lin-Manuel Miranda, and ticking a whole load of boxes because, of course, people think back. I haven't seen the original, but yes, there is, of course, a problem because some people have had a certain amount of fun at the expense of this movie because the character that you remember most is, in fact, Sebastian the Crab, the servant of King Triton beneath the waves, and voiced by David Diggs. It's a Jamaican accent, and he sings these calypso lyrics,
Under the
such as
sea,
under.
under the sea, everything's good, everything's great, under the sea.
Say that together with Flounder the Fish and Scuttle the Seagull, you see, these are the friends of Ariel, and the actress, Alex, is actually Halle Bailey. And I mean, her guardians, to a certain extent, steal the show, but I think that this was a very enjoyable trip, so far as I was concerned, certainly, because you had, obviously, you've got this kaleidoscope of color beneath the waves. I mean, that is not difficult to create these days, but a very tuneful movie, book and lyrics seemed fine to me. I was sort of humming and I was ta my tapping my feet and so on. I mean, the story as such, yes, it's a romance, and it's a romance between also two supposedly contradictory forces, the world beneath the oceans, which is ruled by King Triton, played by Javier Bardem, who has a strong distrust of humanity. What's above the waves? It's set in the 18th century. Well, we have Prince Eric, who is rescued by the Little Mermaid,
But he's
by
adopted,
Ariel.
Richard. He's adopted by his family. In the original, he wasn't adopted, he was their natural child.
Well, yes, he's adopted, but not a relatively minor matter, really, because what happens is that he's involved in a shipwreck. And Ariel saves him. He falls in love instantly with her, and indeed is absolutely devastated when she
Or
disappears.
is it her voice, Richard? Is it her or is it her voice?
Well, her voice seemed fine to me, I have to say, but as far as she's concerned, well, King Triton says, don't mix with the humans. But she's curious and she's always interested in doing precisely that. Is it indeed the Wicked Witch? We have Melissa McCarthy. And here's an example of overacting, which does not help a movie, because quite honestly, we see too much of her. And when we see her as an octopus, it gets rather tedious because those tentacles should have got round the scriptwriter.
Is she not just playing herself, though? Is this not a case of Melissa McCarthy simply actually playing Melissa McCarthy yet again?
The thing is that I have found her very funny occasionally, and also I find her in this, she's rather irritating because she doesn't like King Triton, and as a result, to get her revenge on
but
him.
But he's her brother.
She wants to rule the oceans, and the way she does it is by corrupting little Ariel. Now, how far does that go, and how far would it have gone if, in fact, we hadn't had the creatures I've mentioned, Sebastian the crab, Flounder the fish, Scuttle the seagull. I think she might have
succeeded. Voiced by Awkwafina.
Yes, indeed. But let us not give spoilers. This is not a movie full of surprises. But yes, we've got an adopted Eric, and indeed one of the courtiers of the Queen, played by Noma Duzwerny, is actually Art Malik, and Alex is reminiscing in the past roles. You will recall the Jewel in the Crown, where he acted so memorably years and years ago on that brilliant television series. So it's rather good to see him. And I have to say, overall, I mean, this is a colourful movie. It's obviously a lot of it is beneath the waves. I do have to say the shipwreck and some of the sea scenes could have been much better and more realistically done.
Not as colourful as the original one, of course, Richard.
This is fun, and it takes advantage of all the CGI that you could wish beneath the waves, a certain amount of it above them, and also some rather charming scenes. This is not the most subtle movie ever made. It is not pretending to me. It is, however, very enjoyable. I thought it was great fun. Towards the end, where you have, shall we say, a Disneyfication, I will go no further. But I mean, this does not have a particularly surprising ending. On the other hand, it is Disney. You're going to get this sort of sentimentality. It's very good fun and should be enjoyed as such. But also, as I say, you could tap your feet to the tunes, and it is handled by a real pro in Rob Marshall. And I think that comes through. Yes, bits are overdone, but I enjoyed it.
I would not cross the threshold of a cinema to see this, but I shall probably watch it on Disney Plus. Sarah Huntley, is this something for yourself, or is it a case of, look, the Disney people have actually gone on strike in Paris in Euro Disney, probably as a byproduct of the challenges they've been faced with in terms of, yet again, Disney actually reproducing and remaking its own particular thing as a CGI epic?
Oh, well, I don't know all about those internal politics. So I can't really comment, but I think, yes, I will go and see it. And I think one of the things we all need to think about is the audience is aimed at. So if you take somebody who's 6 or 7 to come and go and see this, if Richard is tapping his feet, goodness knows what a little 6-year-old girl is going to do, you know. I think they'll engage brilliantly with it. And I think for me, probably the enjoyment I would get from the film is them engaging with it. I took, you know, when Paddington came out, I took my young neighbours to see it, and we had a I mean, I adore Paddington Bear films. I know we're not talking about that, but I kind of feel from what Richard said about this, there would be that positive energy that comes from it, and also being with a smaller person that you know is going to remember that film for the rest of their lives. Like, Richard and I and you come from the Dumbo bit, don't we? I mean, you know, crying or Bambi.
That's a bit late for me. I'm more Jungle Book, really.
I'm sure you cried at Bambi when he lost his mummy, you know. And so, therefore, this will ring with people of smaller age groups. If I had a granddaughter or a grandson, I would definitely take them to see this. But I think I might go anyway, actually.
Well done, Sarah, may I say. Well done. I mean, kiss the girl, she's in love, part of your world, under the sea. It's very hummable and it's a tuneful.
Richard, we should go together and see it then.
No, it's a very good idea. I have to say that just two two rows behind me, there were a couple of, I think they're probably about, say, 18, 16, something in that area. And they were sort of humming and moving. And indeed, I was watching them as the credits were going down and they've had Calypso. And it was great fun. You could see that they really enjoyed it. You know, just to sit back and enjoy. Yes, it's overdone in bits, but so what?
Jessica Burtis, is this something which you feel... perhaps I will or perhaps I won't, because after all, nothing can truly replace the original.
I do want to see it. With a lot of the Disney adaptations of the princess movies, I haven't really been seeing them in the theater. I'll see them once they come out on DVD or on TV. I guess now it's Disney Plus. I think one of the main things with adaptations like this is that they're very kind of using the nostalgia that everybody has around the movies, because it's fun to see familiar characters and see things a little bit differently and to see how things have changed between adaptations. So I think that to me is always the most interesting part, seeing how and what they've chosen to adapt. I think that's really interesting. But I do want to see it. I think the music alone is just so iconic and catchy that it's worth it just to go and kind of have that sing-along with other friends.
Well, there is an argument that says that the three new songs that have actually emerged in the movie are the weakest of the oeuvre, and that it could be a lot shorter, because really 2 hours, 15 minutes, Richard, you know, they could have easily trimmed it by 30 minutes, taken out the Awkwafina scuttle aspects, and it would have probably worked much better.
Did you see it, Alex? You did. I take it.
As I said, I will not cross the threshold of a cinema to see this. I will wait until it arrives.
In which case, to comment on its length, which, yes, I agree, it was a bit long. Okay.
Because you're consistently saying it's too long. When it needs to be reduced to shortness.
I simply point out that listening to what you said, people would have assumed that you had personally seen it. Now, you mustn't rely on me alone, Alex.
No. I mean, it's simply a case of never make assumptions. Richard, we know that you've been busy recently because I gather you've followed in the footsteps of the Duke and taken the portrait to the National Portrait Gallery and refused to actually have Harry and William portrayed again. So you've withdrawn that, and presumably it's tucked away somewhere in the Fitzwilliam's attic, I would have thought.
Give me a chance to see the rehang at the National Portrait Gallery. The gallery is closed at the moment. It's opening very soon, and I'm looking forward to commenting on it. Yes, apparently the portrait of William and Harry, the first that was ever done.
They've given it to you, Richard, admit it.
Admit what? I haven't yet seen what's not there, and I would prefer, and the Daily Mail reported that the portrait had in fact not been included in the rehang. Now, that's very possible. I mean, there's one of the Princess of Wales there, and I wonder whether that will be up, because that got slated by the reviewers, and the unfortunate thing is, when you look at it, she seems to look in two directions at you, and which is slightly disconcerting. So, I mean, that was actually commissioned by the National Portrait Gallery, so I wonder whether that will be there. So it'd be fascinating, but I haven't yet seen.
Okay. Sarah, any other closing comments you'd like to raise? We've had Dean Friedman singing Ariel. We've had some original tracks from Little Mermaid. What else would you actually like to see, as indeed you have the right of the upcoming birthday to actually say have the last words on this particular sort of
last words? Well, I'd like to compliment you, Alex, this week and last week on your amazing accents you're giving us. We had the American last week and this one this week, so we're all enjoying those. I went to see Motive and the Queue at the National, which was fantastic.
Absolutely. I'm longing to see that, yeah.
It really is amazing. So that would, I'd give 10 out of 10 to go and see that.
Wow.
Gatiss is fantastic as Gilgood, but even to the point where he just moves his head slightly, you know, all the mannerisms and the characterisms are brilliant. I then went to see a thing called the Dixon Sisters at the National on Saturday, which one of my best friends from drama school, her stepdaughter, was written and was there. And I have to say, I said to Deborah, Bruce has written it, very well done. Not the kind of thing that I would probably have booked to go and see, because it's all about abuse. But actually, she managed to write a play which was brilliant and had comedy in, and not at anyone's expense. So that's another thing on the list that I think people should go and see. I went to see Dancing at Lunasa's. I can never say that properly.
Lunasa.
Oh, yes. Sorry, the Irish here. Can you do it in an Irish accent?
Well, sure enough.
Good morning to you, Alex. Of course you could, yes. And then I'm off to see Guys and Dolls. Standing up for it, actually, in the evening on Tuesday. I'm going to go and see that. Gosh, there's so much I want to go and see. I'm going to take Richard to some of these things. I really want to go to Stratford to see As You Like It, because a friend of mine is doing the music for that, and they're casting it as old people. So Geraldine McEwan is cast, she's 70, and they're doing all of As You Like It as older people looking back, which I think is quite a clever move. So that's extremely good. And I know it's going to be extremely good. So I'm looking forward to that. And what else am I going to see? I'm going to see quite a bit. And another thing I watched when I was very, very tired the other day, and I wanted to pure escapism, I watched a thing on television. I heard it being talked about on the radio, called Maryland, which was really good. And it's about two sisters who have to go to the Isle of Man because they're told that their mother is dead, and they don't know why their mother is on the Isle of Man. And it all unravels that their mother has been leading a double life. So if you want to get lost in something, that's really, really good as well.
This is ITV, I believe.
Is it? Well, I'm sorry. I'm not good on all of this. But yes. So I have some really fascinating. And another thing I'm off to see is I met the director Melly of. There's a new adaptation of Robin Hood at Regent's Park this year, and it's about to open on Monday. So I'll probably take Fitzwilliams with me to see that. But I promised Melly I'd go and see it. A really interesting director lady. So yeah, I'm busy getting around out there.
Excellent.
And making up for being barred in with Lambda.
I shall think of you whilst I continue marking student essays. For the moment, Jessica Bahutis, huge thanks. Richard Fitzwilliams, as ever. Sarah Huntley, likewise. Keep on keeping on. And as always, keep watching those movies.
Ariel, listen to me. World, it's a mess. Life under the sea is better than anything they got up there. The seaweed is always greener in somebody else's lake. You dream about going up there, but that is a big mistake. Just look at the world around you, right here on the ocean floor. Such wonderful things around you. What more is you looking for? Under the sea. Under the sea, darling, it's better down where it's wetter. Take it from me. Up on the shore, they work all day. Out in the sun, they slave away. While we're devoting full time to floating under the sea. Down here, all the fish is happy as off through the waves they roll. The fish on the land ain't happy. They saw 'cause they in the bowl. But fish in the bowl is lucky. They in for a worse of fate. One day when the boss get hungry,
yes, you go beyond the pay.
But go under the sea, under the sea. Nobody beat us, fry us, and eat us in fricassee. We what the land folks loves to cook. Under the sea, we have to hook up. We got no troubles. Life is the bubbles under the sea.
Under the sea.
Under the sea.
Under the sea.
Since life is sweet here, we got to be here
naturally.
Even the sturgeon and the ray, did it the earth and start to play. We got the spirit, you got to hear it. Under the sea.
play the flute, the cop play the hop, the place play the bass and the sound, the chop, the bass play the brass, the chub play the tub. The flute is the duke of soul. The way he can play the lings on the strings, the chub rocking on the blackfish. He sings his belt and his front. They know where it's at. They know that blowfish blow.
Ariel. side of the Hudson, deep in the bosom of suburbia. I met a young girl, she sang mighty fine. Tears on my pillow and Ave Maria. Tears on my pillow and Ave Maria. Tears on my pillow and Ave Maria.
Well, the Beatles once sang about when I'm 64, will you still love me? Will you still need me when I'm 64? And that was a time when, of course, that was viewed as, certainly at least 1 year before retiring, etc. Of course, these days, whether you're actually in France or indeed in the UK or wherever you happen to be, you might well wonder whether you can actually afford to retire in the first place, with recently many people saying that they are very concerned that they just do not have enough capital set aside to address their whole side of things. So to actually address this particular issue, we're delighted to welcome from Wealth at Work, the wonderful Jonathan Watts-Lay. How are you, Jonathan?
Yeah, I'm good.
Now, this finding, one in three of us think we won't be able to actually retire at all, let alone actually sort of thinking, well, we're going to retire in a year, 2 years, whether it's 64, 65, 66, 60, whatever, etc. That's quite a frightening statistic, isn't it? I mean, you know, is it the truly case of, well, we're back to the days where effectively we work until we drop?
Yeah, I mean, so Wealth at Work did some research across all the age ranges, and I guess some really stark figures came out. And the backdrop to it all, I guess, is the current cost of living crisis and the impact that's having. So people are clearly worried about what they're saving and therefore their ability to retire. A couple of stats that came out of that research. So 83%, an astonishing 83%, say that the cost of living crisis will mean they will have to work longer. So I think, and this is across all the age ranges, so there are reasons for saying that could be slightly different, but it does paint a picture that clearly people don't believe that they're going to be in a sort of golden age of early retirement. They're certainly thinking that they're going to have to work and perhaps they will be able to retire at some point. But that may be more challenging for many of them.
We've seen the huge furore in France, as I mentioned, where the government dare to actually raise the retirement age from 62 to 63. I mean, here, of course, 67, probably going to 70 very shortly as the years go by. Is there anything we can actually do other than a case of, well, you need to save more whilst you're actually working?
Yeah, I think that's the key thing, is that people need to make sure that they are saving enough for their retirement. And of course, that's coming under pressure right now because of the cost of living crisis. The research showed that 59% of people said that they were considering reducing or stopping their pension contributions. So, of course, with that kind of backdrop, that means that ultimately their pension pots are going to be worth less, and therefore they're it's going to be even harder for them to retire. So I guess one of the things that people need to think about is, can they carry on contributing to their pensions? And maybe there's other costs that they have that they should look at reducing first. One of the areas that we often help people with is looking at some of those, if you like, monthly costs that people have, where they don't really shop around and yet they could save hundreds of pounds over a year. So typical things will be things like broadband, mobile phone contracts, insurances, so car insurance or household insurance, even subscriptions. So often we see that people have multiple subscriptions for fundamentally the same sort of thing, or they have subscriptions for services they no longer use. So it's always a good idea to look at your bank statement, have a look at actually where that money is going every month, and seeing, can you shop around? Can you get lower rates? Or other simply things that you don't need any longer.
Is it feasible that, as well as ring fencing the pension pot funds, or possibly even electric fencing, not just ring fencing the whole thing, so that they actually stay untouched? You've added some suggestions there in terms of ways in which we can make general savings possibly. I mean, there are many people who might be listening to this who say, we've already cut all our broadband services out, etc. We're desperately having to work through that. Would you then say it might be worthwhile speaking to a professional accountant?
Well, I think that people need to have a look at kind of where that money is, where they're spending money, and seeing, can they manage, can they maybe cut certain things out to allow them to manage their budget better. Of course, we need to all be aware that interest rates are going up, so some people are going to be having their fixed rate mortgages renewed over the coming months, and of course that's going to inflict more pain. So there's certainly a lot of assessing of outgoings that people are going to have to make over the coming months. But I think that in terms of support, then there's lots of things people can do. So often employers will help their employees. Often they have financial well-being programs, so there's often helplines and maybe guidance services that are available. There is actually a government side as well, moneyhelper.org.uk, which can support people on general money management. And also they have a specific site around pensions, so that may be able to help. But of course, for people that are really struggling and potentially getting into debt, then really they need to look at other places. So there's places like the Citizens Advice Bureau who will be able to give advice, or indeed debt charities such as Step Change who will be able to help them.
You mentioned that this aspect is affecting people across all age ranges. In terms of people's working environments, of course, although we don't hear much talk these days of the gig economy, there are many people who are still on freelance contracts and so on and so forth. What advice would you give them if they're kind of obviously saying, well, you know, they're literally just looking from post to post for gig to gig?
Yeah, I think it's tough because people need to be aware that if they don't save for their retirement, then they're going to have a pretty lean retirement. As you say, state pension age is going up. The state pension effectively only covers basic costs. So if you want anything more than a very, very basic retirement, then you are going to have to save. And of course, the earlier you save, the better, because money that you save in your 20s and your 30s effectively compounds up. So by the time you get to retirement, that should, all being well, be worth a lot more. Whereas if you delay saving that money until later in life, then it's very hard to build up a reasonable pension pot to help supplement that state pension. So they do need to think long and hard about it. But of course, you know, different people take different views. Some people say, well, you know, I'm quite happy having a very basic retirement, and so therefore they feel less the need to save for their retirement. Whereas other people sort of have, if you like, quite ambitious targets for their retirement in terms of, you know, traveling the world or whatever it might be. Well, of course, if they want to do that, then that's going to cost money.
Yeah, it's all to be considered on an individual basis. Finally, Jonathan, where can people actually access details from the survey of Wealth at Work?
Yeah, so if they go to wealthatwork.co.uk, they will find the survey on there and also a lot of other information that they may find helpful.
Jonathan Watsley from Wealth at Work, huge thanks, and keep on saving.
I get older, losing my hair, many years from now. Will you still be sending me a Valentine, birthday greetings, bottle of wine? If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me, will you still feed me, when I'm 64? Sweater by the fireside, Sunday mornings go for a ride, doing the garden, digging the weeds, who could ask for more? Will you still need me, will you still feed me, when I'm 64? Every summer we can rent a cottage in the Isle of Wight, if it's not too dear. Line stating point of view, indicate precisely.
precisely what you mean to say. You're sincerely wasting away. Give me your answer, fill in a form, mine forevermore. Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
they understand. Bet they don't reprimand their daughters. Bright young women, sick of foremen, ready to stand. Ready to know what the people know. Ask them my questions and get some answers. What's a fire and why does it, what's the word? I could breathe.